Better Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and our guest today is Mr. Dean Powell. Mr. Powell, how you doing, sir?
Great. Good to be here.
I see you're the founder of Focus Prison Ministries. Is that right?
That's correct, Randy.
It's not what you've done all your life. That's kind of where you are now after your journey through young adulthood and the Vietnam War and even a little time in a federal penitentiary.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably a full circle that led up to Focus Prison Ministry. Got that started back in 91, and since that time, merged ministries with Steve Humphreys, a very good friend of mine, and we've really watched that ministry take off, and God's done some miraculous things in that.
For you listeners out there, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a boy from South Carolina who probably wasn't the ideal student.
No. Absolutely not.
And I think you inferred that maybe the principals were kind of happy to see you graduate, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
They were encouraging you.
Don't blame them.
Motivating you. Okay. Then after that, you went into the military right after high school?
That's correct.
And wound up in Vietnam. How old were you when you got to Vietnam?
I was 19 years old when I got to Vietnam.
This was in 1968.
Yes, it was.
What did you know about Vietnam at the time?
That it was something I couldn't even spell as far as the name of the country. Also, I'd had friends who had already gone to Vietnam and actually died in Vietnam, guys that I'd gone to high school with. I knew it was not going to be a safe place. That's about it.
So today you're going to be hearing a story about this amazing journey all the way from high school to a person running their own ministry. We're going to be talking about some time in prison and some changes in your life and some low points, maybe some high points and things like that.
Sounds like a good time.
Dean, you were mentioning a minute ago that you had some issues even as a child. Can you tell us about those a little bit?
Well, Randy, at age 7, I lost my dad. And as a young lad at age 7, you know, you don't really know how to think about grieving. But I remember, as I look back on it, it was some very voided times in my life. And I was looking for answers because I didn't have a dad. My mom, a couple of years later, as I look at it, I see now as an adult, she had needs in her life she needed to have met. Unfortunately, that she married a gentleman that turns out to be an alcoholic. And I, as a young man, have somebody moving into my house that's supposed to be my new dad, and I haven't even grieved the life of my old dad, and someone that I could never have respect for. My security base was just totally rattled. I didn't feel like I had much support there. I even felt really abandoned by my mom at that moment as a young man.
Were you an only child?
No, I wasn't. I had two brothers, one who is still living and one who died at an early age in a motorcycle accident. But there was a 4 years age span between my older brother and myself. And as I sit and talk to you, I can remember how I was always looking to him to be a role model. And unfortunately, without a dad around to keep him in line, wasn't necessarily the best role model for a young man.
So, and you think that led to some of your issues in high school?
Yes, it did. You know, I never had anybody to help me at home with my homework. I would have studies to come home. My mom, she worked 10 to 12 hours a day just to put food on our table. We didn't have food stamps back then. And she worked her fingers to the bone. I admire her so much. She taught me so much about life and how to balance myself, to make it no matter what the circumstances might be.
So the people at school were more representative of authority than they were anything. Is that right?
You know, pretty much that was it. And I had a hard time, as you say, not having a dad. I had a hard time with authority and facing authority. And because of that, I never really learned how to read or write, not until much later on. And that came when I got into prison.
And you talked a little bit about your principal at your school, how he led you to the decision to graduate?
Oh, yeah. This is very I was a little rowdy guy, and unfortunately, liked to fight a lot. I always felt like that I was very insignificant, insecure. I had, if you name a complex that caused a person to feel less about himself, I had it. Yeah, the principal of the school, I'd go to summer school every year. My mom wanted me to graduate from high school. So I'd say, Mom, I'll do that. I went to school enough just to get by. But as I was getting by, I was learning nothing, because if you don't know how to read, you can't keep up with what everyone else is doing. But I remember my last year of summer school, they were offering some classes at Parker High School, where I went to school, and they wanted me to go across town to Greenville High School to take these classes because Parker was not offering them in summer school. And my principal told me that I was going to go to Greenville High School, and I was going to attend class, and I was going to sign my papers every day so I could graduate. And in my arrogant little way, I said, yeah, I can do that. I can, if I'm going to get out of high school, I can do that.
Okay, so you got out of high school. Did you get drafted, or did you join the military?
I volunteered for the draft. Another interesting story.
Okay.
I didn't realize, I married a woman at age 18. My mom went crazy. She couldn't believe I was doing it. But I married her at age 18. She already had a child. She was about 4 years older than me. And I always tell the story that I ran off and joined the Army to get away from her. And basically, that's what I did. Sadly, I did.
Okay, so troubled child has a hard time in high school and graduates and jumps into a marriage of convenience maybe or whatever, and then winds up joining the Army?
Correct.
Was it next stop Vietnam, or did something happen to you in between there? Or?
No, that was the next stop was Vietnam. I went through basic training and advanced infantry training, and then went to Vietnam and went through LERP school. We were talking about LERPs earlier.
Okay, LERP school. Tell me LERP.
Well, it just teaches you a lot about different types of booby traps, different ways to operate explosive material, teaching how to rappel out of helicopters, and also a lot about camouflage and how to become one with the environment.
Okay, and you use a couple of words, recon.
Recon.
Now, this to me, if you weren't here, I was just going to describe this kid. I'd say a troubled high school kid looking for authority and stability, joins the Army, and before you know it, a couple months later, he's in Vietnam.
A whole lot of responsibility.
Okay. All right. Okay. How did you get that responsibility?
Well, I guess when I got to Vietnam, Randy, I recognized one thing that I wanted, and that was to get out alive. I didn't want to die in a country that really, I didn't like the way it smelled. I never smelled anything. It just smelled horrible. Vietnam didn't have a real good smell about it. You know, a lot of explosives going off in different time. And even the way we got rid of our human waste is just a horrible stint. You just you can't imagine what it is unless you experience walking in an area where we getting rid of, how do you say this over the radio? You
had to stir the fire.
You had to stir the fire, which, you know, when you're getting rid of human waste and you have to stir that stuff and it's mixed with jet fuel, it's who?
Okay, so there you are in Vietnam going on recon, investigating tunnels.
Yes, we did that.
And doing snatches.
Yeah, snatches where we would go into an area where we've known that there was enemy fire, or there was something that happened maybe in a night observation. Somebody go in and set up a night patrol, and they would see certain things happening around a village. Well, we would go in and snatch we called it the honcho, the guy who was over the village. We would go in and take him back for interrogation to find out all the information we could out of this person. Sometimes you got information, sometimes you didn't, but find out what's going wrong in the area.
And you were in I Corps.
We were in I Corps, which is the northern part of Vietnam.
And sometimes you went into Laos, or
our outfit went into Laos to recon.
You talked about your worst day there. You mentioned your worst day a few minutes ago. Can you tell me about that real quick?
Yeah, my worst day was when I got scrap metal in me from a rocket coming from, unfortunately, our own Cobra helicopter. That was a day I'll never forget. It was a very painful moment in my life. You have a piece of hot metal that's entered into your flesh, and your first instinct is to grab where it's hurting. And you realize that if you touch that, it was just causing another part of your body to start hurting. And very fortunately, we had somebody there it had happened to before, and they poured a little water out of the canteen on it. And then,
okay. We're going to go into Dean's experiences after that, but we just wanted to get you folks up to the point where this young man, we got to Vietnam, and now he's got a piece of metal in his arm, but that wound up on recons and ambushes and what was called snatches, where you went in and get sort of like it wasn't a kidnapping, it was a kidnapping, wasn't it? Kidnapping of enemy leaders in villages.
I guess you could call it that, Randy.
Okay, and then you got injured by friendly fire in your arm, and then you went to the hospital for one day, and then went to recovery for a week, and then you were back in the field.
That's correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I know you went home, and I don't know exactly when you went home, but once you got home, tell us about that the first time.
Well, after I went home the first time, I'm on my leave and waiting to report somewhere to Fort Riley, Kansas. And during that period of time, we lost 13 of our guys in one day in my outfit.
But you weren't there.
No, I was not there.
It just
I was
happened.
Only.
Okay.
We only have 24 guys in my outfit. So, believe me, I fought it. I didn't want to go back, but I was told I was going back to Vietnam. Didn't happen often, but I found out it happened not just to me, but several other people.
Well, did they raise your rank when they sent you back?
Yeah, I guess they did. And, you know, in retrospect, never looked at it. But, yeah, I was a E4, mm-hmm. and I got promoted to E5. But rank wasn't so important as leadership ability, people who had a feel for what they were doing on the ground. There was a lot of times that as a E3, I'd find myself making calls and telling people what to do in certain situations. You mentioned earlier about crawling in tunnels. Now, the first time I went to Vietnam, I didn't think anything about it. I'd just jump in a tunnel and look around, and thank God most of the times you didn't find much of anything, but there was times that you would.
Did you know which of those 13 men had been killed before you went back to Vietnam?
I knew them all.
Well, I know, but did you know which ones had been killed?
No.
So you sort of had to go back in and find out.
I had to go back in and find out. That's correct.
Wow.
And it was a moment that I guess you can say it was a dark day in my life.
Yeah.
And that's part of my PTSD problem is times I think about those guys and what they gave. And
I was sort of thinking about the trip. Did you fly back over?
Yes, I did.
And you were sitting there, did you know 13 had been killed?
Not until I got back in country.
Oh, okay. All right.
I didn't have a reason. The only reason I had to going back for Vietnam I could get was you're back on orders to go.
Wow. What a trip to think you're going home and then somebody turn around and say, oh, by the way, it's like a horror movie. You think you've gotten rid of all the bad things in the horror show and all of a sudden it pops back up and here it is again.
Well, trust me, I fought it. I didn't want to go. Because when I came through California coming back, I think it's important that this is talked about. because it was something that caused me a lot of confusion and a lot of pain. And as when I come through California on my way back the first time, there was a lot of protesters out there. In Greenville, South Carolina, where I'm from, a native of, we didn't have protesters. But in California, they were lined up protesting Vietnam and the soldier. And as a soldier, I felt very confused about that, especially having guys already in my outfit had died in missions. And I'm there right beside of them, and I see that we're fighting for something. And
you were 20.
At that time, I was 20 years old. That's correct.
And you didn't understand that those folks didn't understand that they couldn't separate the soldier from the unpopular war, that because the war was unpopular, you were therefore unpopular.
And I was a part, yeah. I was the butt of...
The symbol.
Yeah. Their symbol, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you went back for a couple months. Anything unusual happened while you were there second time?
Yeah, something very unusual happened. That's when I got started using drugs.
Okay.
I came home and I saw the protest. I saw the evening news talking about what horrible people we were. Now I'm going back, not on my own free will. I'm going back because they want me to go back. I've become very angry. And when I went back, I wasn't necessarily the best soldier. Now, I still had that number one goal in mind. I wanted to come home alive. And I wanted everybody around me to come home alive. But I started doing a lot of drugs. I got started doing drugs because there was a guy named Willie D from D.C. He came to me and he said, Dean, he said, if you take a shot of this, you won't worry about those other shots coming at you. You can actually lay down and go to sleep at night.
What was it?
Heroin.
Heroin?
Yeah. Well, the first thing it came with was marijuana, mm-hmm. but that didn't last long. Consumed by the drug, the people you're around. And as I was telling you earlier before the show, we were broken up into three segments. We had the people who drank a lot, we had the people who were druggies, and then we had people who were straight-laced. I stayed with the straight-laced people the first time I was there. And then the second time I came back, I drifted into the drug world. And I came home with a very serious problem.
You came home addicted?
Yes.
And that was in 1970.
1970. June of 1970.
Were you still married?
Yes, for a short period of time.
Okay, and so you came. Did you come into a troubled marriage when you came home?
No, we were already separated and made up our minds that we were going to get divorced. And I'm really not proud of the way I treated that poor lady that I was married to, but it was...
Well, you weren't proud of the way you treated yourself either, but you got through it.
Yeah, this is true.
Okay. So you've come home from Vietnam addicted to heroin,
mm-hmm.
having a broken marriage.
Mm-hmm.
How long before you got in trouble? And what were you doing?
I was doing drugs when I got in trouble, selling drugs. When I came home from Vietnam, I didn't have but just a few skills. I knew how to use my hands to fight. I knew how to shoot a weapon. And also, I knew how to recon. When I came home, the guys that I was in high school with, they were all doing drugs. It was like they got involved while I was gone. And they were buying drugs, and they were paying such a high price for it, I recognized right off that I couldn't afford to do drugs. So I used my recon skills, become one with the environment to find out where the drugs was coming from. And in a stupid way, I thought I was doing my friends a favor by getting drugs cheaper and giving it to them so they could sell and make money. Of course, I was supporting my habit by doing the same thing. So the skills that I had... Unfortunately, were used for something of bad rather than good.
But you survived 3 years like that before you...
Before I went to prison, I survived 3 years like that.
And then you went to prison.
Yes. I went to prison in 1974. I was convicted of interstate transportation. That was taking drugs from one state to the other, and the federal people came in and busted me for that. In the county where I lived, unfortunately, something else had added to my anger. I found out that the police department was involved in selling drugs, and I got in cahoots with them. I felt like I was legal, but then all of a sudden, I got so greedy, they couldn't supply enough drugs. I went outside of state to get drugs so I could deal more drugs, and through that happening, the federal people got involved. Where I thought I was legal selling drugs in my county, I found out I was very illegal. I never will forget when the warrant came in, the United States of America versus Lonnie Dean Powell. I mean, whoa. Wow.
That's a big one, isn't it?
I felt like a little pea ant.
Okay. Troubled child, rough high school, in the Army now, Vietnam, wounded, addicted to drugs, came home, became a dealer, thought you were protected. You said legal. I think protected might be a better word.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're in prison. Tell me about that first night in prison.
Wow. First night in prison. Well, I'm calling out to God.
First day.
Well, I was already, Randy, let me back up. You know, something I didn't say, you know, there was about 6 months, almost 6 months, that God had already started speaking to me, and I'd gotten off of drugs. And miraculously, he got me off of drugs without any withdrawals. And that's another story for another day, because that would take a long time to go into that. But how he just miraculously just pulled me out of that. No headaches, no cramps, no sweats, no running nose, no itchy eyes. But anyway, God saved me about 6 months before I went to jail. And then all of a sudden, my past started coming up to catch up with me. And all my old buddies were saying, what are you doing serving a God that now is going to send you to jail? All this stuff is coming back on you. And, you know, I didn't know how to read or write then, but somebody gave me Romans 8:28, said, memorize this verse here, that all things work together for good for those who love the Lord, call according to his purpose. And I kept saying, okay, Lord, you're going to work it out for good. But it just doesn't feel real good. So my first night in jail, I'm calling out and I say, Lord, it still doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good. In his own way, though, he told me to trust him. And I didn't understand. As I look into the scripture, I understand more about trusting him. But at that time, I did not know anything about trusting him.
We're going to talk about Dean's journey after his time in prison, maybe a couple of things they learned while he was in prison. Dean, you've had quite a journey. It hadn't been easy, has it?
No, but it's been rewarding and fulfilling.
Okay, but before we had the breaks, life had just placed you in prison with a very limited ability to spell and to read. You had seen the error in your ways.
Yes.
But you still had a price to pay.
Yes, I did. Unfortunately, we live in a republic. And there is things you have to pay for. Be sure to know your sins will find you out. Well, mine did. Yeah, when I moved into prison, like Vietnam, first day I recognized something. I recognized that I wanted me out of that place. I didn't want to stay there. So I immediately started assessing myself and what it would take for me to be a better person, that I might become an asset to the community and not something that is worth throwing away. And unfortunately, a lot of our prisons are where people are just actually thrown away. I went to work on. I had one job skill other than using my hands and shooting weapons. And that was, my grandfather taught me how to be a plumber. So I went to work in the plumbing department inside the prison, and I worked 4 hours a day. And after 4 hours a day, I'd go to the learning center and study 4 hours a day. The gentleman that I read to, his name was Donald. He's really a nice guy. He makes a lot of different decisions than I would make with my life, and I don't know if I'd talk about those here, and I won't do that. But Donald was a guy that taught me my ABCs. He taught me how to enunciate. He taught me the mechanics of the English language. He taught me what a verb was, what a noun was, what a consonant was. He just worked with me every day in a very patient way, and I'd sit there and I would read to him like a little boy would normally read to his mom or his dad. And until I finally learned how to read, and after I got to a point where I could pass a test to get into college, thank God that there was a college available for me inside the prison at that time. It was the classes we would take in the evening time, but I had to take prerequisites to my English and math in order to qualify to get in. But I didn't mind doing that just for an opportunity to go. One thing I say about my GI Bill, it was good. It helped me pay for my education while I was in jail.
Excuse me, before going further, were you having interruptions about your experience in Vietnam during this time, or was that just on a back burner?
I was having nightmares about Vietnam. One thing that I got upset about when I went to prison was I saw a lot of other my comrades that I was in Vietnam with that had had drug problems, and they ended up in prison with me. We all wondered why there couldn't have been some kind of program that got us involved in to help us transition back to the streets rather than just turning us loose.
You mean from the military?
From the military, yeah.
Okay.
Because when we came home, the military, they just gave us a uniform, sent us out on the street. There was not any questions about if you've been doing drugs or not. Of course, I'm sure I would have lied. I would have told people at that time, no, I wasn't doing drugs. But there should be some kind of safety net to catch people. And thank God we have that now. As a matter of fact, I'm involved in Veterans Treatment Court that helps men coming home from Afghanistan and Iraq do just that, transition back to the streets. We have a lot of soldiers coming home with a lot of problems today that we're working through a lot differently than just sending them straight to prison. But anyway, inside of prison, I went to school, continued to work on bettering myself. I worked my way up to, you would say I was the model prisoner. Never gave anybody any problems. Going to school, trying to better myself. Volunteering in the chaplain's office, doing things that a good Christian, quote, would do. Then I went to the parole board one day. I was going to get out on parole. I was coming home. But I found out that the parole board shut me down. And when they shut me down and they gave me a year set off, I went back to my cell and I started having some long conversations with God. You ever get
Time out. Why did they shut you down?
They just told me to bring more time. They didn't.
They just wanted you to pay more.
They wanted me to. Yeah, they wanted me to give them more time for the crime that I committed. Now I was a first-time offender, but I met all the guidelines, and I should have been put out. It's kind of
Dean. You were a first-time offender, but you were good at it.
Oh, yes.
Because you could recon and you could.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, you were trained to survive in that world. You were probably maybe more dangerous than most of the people that were in the drug world because of your skills.
Well, this is true. You know, and, you know, the federal government sets up guidelines, and within those guidelines, I could have gotten out. But you're right. I was guilty as guilty can be. I never have said I was innocent. I was very guilty. When they shut me down, though, Randy, I'm up in my cell. I'd been in prison long enough. I had a private cell. I was up in my cell and had my face in shame buried into my pillow, and I'm crying out to God. You know, what else can I do, God? What else can I do? I've done this. I've gone to school. I've been the model prisoner. I do all these things. And after crying for maybe 20, 30 minutes, and I'm mad at God. I'm throwing punches. And I said, Lord, okay, what am I here? And he told me, he said, son, haven't you asked me to make sure that when you're released, you won't ever have to come back here? You wanted me to prepare you. And now tears really start flowing out of my eyes. And God, lets me know that, yes, son, you are going to be prepared so when you leave here, you don't have to come back.
So what did you do during that 1 year?
Went to continue to go to school.
Okay.
I continued to go to school, and but guess what happened? I came back and got another set off. Now, did I learn anything from my first fight with God? No, I went and fought with him again. But God came back and he reminded me once again, son, I thought you wanted me to prepare you so when you leave here, you will not have to come back. Now with tears just blowing out on me, I said, man, Lord, I said, I'm so sorry. I did it again. Just like we are, you know, we never get it right. It seemed like then we got to come back and we got to repeat it again. But God is faithful, and he's done so many good things from that set off. That set off has brought about more understanding of that. And I couldn't understand somebody going to parole board and being set off, but now I can. When I'm in prison now, and a man comes up to me just brokenhearted, and he tells me about his set off, I can identify with him. Just like the Word says, God takes us through things. So when we get through, we not just we'll be able to handle it, but we'll be able to help other people when they get there, that we can comfort them and encourage them.
And that's what you do now.
That's what I do now with Focus Prison Ministry. Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, Focus Prison Ministry was started, and it's more time than I can explain, but Focus is an acronym for Following Our Choices Unto Success. And we try to teach young men how to make good choices and how to follow their decisions until they experience success. But we also let them know it's unto. It's an ongoing process. It's a never-ending process. We're not just obtaining and resting in our laurels. We're constantly achieving and overcoming. Because that's what we are. We serve God with a grateful heart that he's helping us to overcome.
So for soldiers out there right now that are veterans that are coming home, what do you have to say to them?
We love you. Welcome home. We've got things here to help you with. And those things are, one thing, if you're having a problem with anger issues, if you're having problems going home and getting them alone by yourself and feeling like you want to commit suicide, feeling shameful that you're home and your comrades are left behind, you're feeling guilty about that, anything that you're experiencing is uncomfortable for you, come to us. Let us have an opportunity to communicate with you and tell you some of our stories that are similar.
And it's good to have you back, America.
Great show. Wrap this thing up for us.
Well, Randy, it's been a crazy ride, but it's been a rewarding ride. And it's something that I'm experiencing right now, some of the better days of my life. And the reason I am is because a couple of years ago, a good friend of mine talked me into going to the vet center to talk to someone to get some help with some issues that I was having that I denied for many years, and that was post-traumatic stress. Since getting involved with the groups that I'm involved with now, the veterans, I actually get to sleep at night, and I'm also I'm just so excited that now I'm finding some significance to my life beyond being a prisoner and being an ex-con. And
who do we call?
Well, we'd love for you to call us at 463-8127. And that's area code 865.
And that's not going to solve your problem, but it gets you started.
Absolutely. We want to talk to you. That's 463-8127.
Folks, you're listening to The Veteran Next Door. I'm your host, Randy Baxter, and we'll see you next week.